one of the reses or something, you know. But yeah, there's so many, and like youth, like the high school or college age folks, they have so many good ideas. So this is just like the beginning. And I feel like there's really no limit because all of our stories have been not, you know, kind of suppressed this whole time. So we have so much to say. So this is a perfect starting point for launching healing in your community and for yourself too, and to see what your work does is probably such a healing part for, you know, healing practice for you all. And with that, why don't we go around and just close out with kind of some closing thoughts or just about healing and creativity. And then our hour is nearly done, if you can believe that. So it always goes by so fast. Why don't we start? Let's start with Sequoia. And if you have any closing thoughts or any final words for our listeners.
Yeah, just chimiigwech first, Deanna, for having us on. We're so grateful to be here and to be able to talk about our work and share it with community. And I think I'm also just chimiigwech wopida to Adrian and Sarah for doing this with me. I think that without those two, you know, this dream would not have come true. And I feel very grateful to be able to have this really first big directing project that I'm doing be a full Anishinaabe show. That feels like a dream that I would have never dreamt of. And I think that's a big thing that we keep saying with this work is I never dreamed this was possible, but it's a reality. And now we can start making those dreams more realities. And I'm very grateful for the future work and all that we keep doing. And yeah, I hope that it sparks more joy, more healing, more creativity in our community.
Adrian, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I also want to say chimiigwech wopida to you, Deanna, Sequoia, Sarah. I also want to say chimiigwech wopida to First Peoples Fund. We applied for their first ever production grant. And that's what made this production possible, along with Rosie Seamus Dance, allowing us and giving us space to rehearse. It really does take community. And I feel really uplifted by that. And I'm looking forward to seeing people. See you at Niche.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Halusa Nation.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cup, hit me cup, baby.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder. Hey, Kadigi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to the Monday version of Native Roots Radio, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, Dega, you are right. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, a lot going on this week coming up, but also we have Dr. Stately on today. And Haley, what did you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend?
Any good shows or anything?
Oh, gosh. I did watch some good shows. Yeah. Well, I was trying to, I'm going to Seattle in a couple weekends.
Wait a minute.
Haley gets some time off. No, over the weekend, I've never been to Seattle. Well, I've been to the airport, but I've never been to able to explore the area or anything. We talk about Indigenous representation matters all across the board in every room. And we've seen a lot more of this in films in the more recent years, right, Dega? We talk about Killers of the Flower Moon, Res Dogs is a TV series that just blew up, and North of North is a new one on Netflix too.
Prey, that movie about the prequel to that Schwarzenegger movie.
I haven't seen that one. I'll have to check it out. We have we have a lot of years between the two of us. So when I think of my first run into Native representation in film, I think back to the Twilight Saga.
Oh.
And I was in, I think maybe fourth or fifth grade when the movies came out. The Twilight Saga was a whole book series written by Stephanie Myers. And we know Taylor Lautner played Jacob Black, which was one of the main characters in the saga. Mm-hmm. And Taylor Lautner is not Native. He doesn't have any Indigenous representation actually at all.
Wow.
But Taylor Lautner played Jacob Black, who in the films was a member of the Quileute tribe, which is a real tribe, and it's around the Lapush area in Washington State.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so... the Twilight Saga actually did cast a few true Native actors, which is good to hear. And I did a little bit of digging on here because, I don't know, I always liked the Twilight Saga. And it was being a kid and not knowing about, fake representation and things like that. I just thought it was so cool because I had never seen people that had looked like me or my cousins in films before. So when they were talking about clans and in the film they were the Wolf Clan or whatever, but they even talked about treaties and stuff in the film, but not in the way that would be educational or anything, but more so for the entertainment of it. But Julia Jones was in the Twilight series, and I don't know if these Native actors came in the second movie or the third, but Julia Jones played Leah Clearwater, and Julia is a Native American descendant, specifically from the Choctaw and Chickasaw Nations.
Cool.
Yes, and then Chaske Spencer, who played Sam Yulee, is a member of the Lakota Sioux Nation in the Fort Peckinus Sioux tribes, and he's also enrolled with Fort Peck and Sioux tribes of Montana through his mother. And then I know Kiowa Joseph Gordon was in the Twilight movies too, and he is best known for his role in Embry in the Twilight Saga, but he was also in he played Jim Cree in the AMC series Dark Winds, Dega.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow, great. Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
But yeah, Graham Greene was in the Twilight Saga too. Graham's been in so many different Native films. And he appeared in season one of The Last of Us, which is a new TV series that really came out and blew up in 2023.
Oh.
And they have their new season that just came out.
Exciting. Recently. Exciting. Yeah. And then you're binging on that or watching that?
Yeah. Well, I watched season two, episode two this morning. That one was released last night. We can talk a little bit more about it later on in the show. I don't want to give away too much, but we got Dr. Stately back, and Dr. Stately's back from Ireland.
Oh, I bet you he's got his Irish skirt on and a little bra.
A bra?
You know, Erin Go Bra, Yeah. We got Dr. Stately. We've missed dearly, President and Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And welcome back. Before we get too far into your trip, we just got to give a shout out to the Pope passed away. And this was the first and only Pope that ever recognized boarding schools.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that he was one of the first to do. But yeah, sad.
Yeah.
I think it's remarkable that he passed away after seeing the vice president. So,
you know. Yeah. Well, did he really see him? Because there's reports that he wouldn't see him, but I don't know.
There was like, I think he ended up still seeing him, but like a brief visit with him, even after like, but you know, anyway, I'm kind of joking there, but you know, I'd say like if the vice president reaches out and wants to visit with you, you might want to think twice about that.
Well, especially now after that, right? Jeez.
It's sad though. He died the day after Easter. So sad.
Yeah, definitely. Well, at least he made it through.
But he was ill for a while, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And 88's a good run. I think if I could make 88, even if I'm wheeling around in a wheelchair and then being a burden on my family, I'd still go for it.
Oh my God. Something tells me that your wife isn't going to be wheeling you around in a wheelchair. She'll be like,
yeah,
get one that's motorized. I'm not pushing you around.
Well, we talk about, you know, unplugging and plugging. She wants to be, you know, unplugged. Yeah. I say, you know, keep me plugged in. I want to be a burden.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. You know, it's good you have goals.
Yeah. Exactly. So what kind of swag did you get me from Ireland?
I didn't really get a whole lot. You know why? Because I like, first of all, I packed a whole bunch and I was expecting colder weather than it was actually there. And so I had like all these things that I actually didn't need. Like I brought some boots in case it was rainy and muddy. It didn't rain at all, hardly at all. You know, impact of climate change. And it was like really warm there. The first week I was there, it was like in the 60s, you know, high 50s, low 60s, a couple days, I think it got up almost 70. It was really beautiful. And everybody there was kept saying like, you know, oh, we never have this weather. There's never this kind of weather. It's never this warm. We never have 7 or 8 days a row in sunshine, much less sunshine and warm. So with no rain, and it was like, remarkable, but it was probably easily the most beautiful place I've been in a really long time. It's just magical. Wow,
very cool. And were you able to see that not statue, but they have those feathers for people that gave Ireland money during the
for the Choctaw people? It was an honor to Choctaw people who gave money, who gave some support to them during the famine.
Yeah,
that I didn't see that because it was way down in the southern tip of the island, way down in Cork, and we were way up in the northern part of Ireland for the first week, in a town called Armagh, and then we spent the second week down in on the southwestern part of the island in an area they call County Clare, which is also where the Burren is. The old, you know, volcanic. It's just volcanic and rocky there, but it's really beautiful.
Wow, very cool. Well, hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, and he was good at avoiding the question that he did not get me swag, but it's good to see him again.
Oh, and I had no room in my luggage for it. It was too large. I couldn't bring it back.
Oh, it's too large what you got me. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll be looking in my mailbox here for UPS to be bringing me stuff. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Dr. Stately, President and Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic. And it's great to see you, and we'll be right back.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we are here with Dr. Stately, our friend, president, and executive officer at Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And he's just come back from his trip from Ireland, and it was great to hear and great that you made it back safe. Hey, while you were gone, Native American Community Clinic got some funding along with other other organizations, and congratulations. And that's pretty awesome that that's come through the pipe.
Yeah, I'm not clear. We got a few, on them, but yes, thank you. I think the biggest news that I have is that we actually closed on our capital project on Thursday last week. So we're officially raised the funds to break ground. So
wow,
that's May, which is really exciting. So that happened when I was in Ireland, and I was super anxious about it being away, and I kept getting reassurance that we're going to be on task and on target. So there's a couple of last minute things I had to do. Well, one of the most craziest thing was as part of the closing process, I had to transfer funds from one from our account into another account, and I had to do it through a wire. And then we had to be done by 3:30 because that's the last time you can do it at 3:30 in the afternoon on and it's to send a wire to one of our investor banks. And I was at a pub at that point in time with my sister and my niece, and we were having fish and chips, and we were waiting to listen to a band in this little pub outside of Doolin, Ireland. And I had a really sketchy signal on my phone, but I had enough to get a text, and I tried to go online and answer the wire, but I couldn't get a very clear signal. So to go outside the pub, walk to the top of the hill, which is overlooked the western part of the Atlantic's seaboard. And I'm standing at the top of this mountain, or big huge hill, and it's windy out, and it's the sun is setting, and I'm trying to get online to approve the transfer of the money. And I was it's a little bit of a tight schedule there, but we got it working.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That reminds me of Standing Rock when they were blocking all the signals going out of Standing Rock. And then if you step, if you picked up one leg and then went to the corner of our RV way up in the corner, you could get it. That's crazy.
I remember that.
Yeah, or you had to go up on Facebook Mountain or Hill or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. There was one place I think that everybody would go and they could get a signal if they get to post or something.
Exactly.
That's
crazy. Hey,
but it was super exciting that we accomplished that. And you should have gotten, I think you and Haley would have gotten an invitation from NAC to attend our groundbreaking celebration ceremony this Friday. So it's one of the things we're looking forward to. It's apparently going to be the event of the year. So
wow. Well, I hope we were talking about that, and I hope the blow up colon is going to be there too, so I can get a selfie inside that.
I don't think the blow up colon is going to be there, but you know what, we can make a private event just for you and that colon can do your thing, and whatever happens in Vegas or in the colon can stay there, and
we don't have colon. Wow, that's cool. I guess that's go ahead, Haley.
That's great. I didn't. Yeah, definitely looking forward to the groundbreaking ceremony this Friday. I know we're going to be there for sure. And then you guys also were awarded funding through NACTI, was the fiscal sponsor for NAC and a few other organizations like Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, Indigenous Protectors Movement. What is that funding going to be used for?
So the funding that came from NACTI as a subaward to NAC is was money that was directed to us from, I think, Department of Health and Human Services, DHS. Health and Human Services. So that money is supporting some of the work that we are doing in the community around preventing opiate use disorder, and specifically in connecting young Native men between the ages of 14, 15 through 24 to traditional practices. That money is going to support this work we're doing specifically with young Indigenous men in the Twin Cities. I think we're planning to have a young warriors camp in the summer. We've been doing these camps for Indigenous men and women for the last 2 years. And we just had our winter camp for the men's work that we do to support them their ongoing recovery and also their reconnection to their culture and their ceremonies and their traditional practices. And we just had that one wrap up at the end of March, like right before I went to Ireland. And that was a really beautiful experience. We actually sent a small group, a small subset group of those young men off to Cheyenne River to do a buffalo hunt. They killed a buffalo, and they have worked over the last several weeks to, you know, process the buffalo. I had to go out and buy like 2 freezers to store all the buffalo meat in my home because we didn't have space for all the buffalo meat. And then so they'll do things, and then we'll have a women's camp here coming up in May, I think middle of May, something like that. And then those women will start to work on tanning the buffalo hide from that buffalo kill. They'll probably do a significant amount of the work there in that 3-day camp. And then the men will finish the hide in their next summer camp, which will be in mid-June to late June. Wow. And then if there's more work to be done on that hide or other things that are related to the buffalo, then the young people's camp will do some of that work. So it's all focused on reconnecting to land, to ceremonial ceremonies, to medicines, and to those kinds of things. So it's really intended to support the building of confidence and the ability to sort of practice giving people the space and the things that they need also to like to do those things. One of the things we've learned over the last 3 or 4 years or 5 years or so of doing our traditional healing program is that a lot of people in the Twin Cities, especially in urban places, they don't have like, maybe they didn't grow up around grandparents or great grandparents that taught them those practices. Maybe they didn't grow up near or able to go back home to do things like go to ceremonies or to powwows and those kinds of things. They don't have the resources to be able to make ceremonial objects and ceremonial regalia that you would wear or use for ceremony. So one of the things we've done is over the last couple of years is we built the process of being able to give younger people and young adults this knowledge and access to these things, but also learn the songs, how to make a drum, how to make a shield, how to make moccasins, how to make the regalia. One of the things we talked about when we decided to do this buffalo hunt was the men went out and they did a traditional hunt with some people from Cheyenne River. You know, they took a couple of them took pictures of them eating, you know, taking the bite out of the buffalo heart or the buffalo liver. One of the things that we got from that buffalo hunt is we have I have the buffalo heart in my freezer, and when we finally dig the big hole in the ground in front of our new building, which we're going to be putting, we're going to do a two-part ceremony where our staff all got together last month and we laid down prayers and put up prayers for our new building and for a successful build, but also like this is our gift, our love song to the community. And so we put all of our love and our prayers into that bundle. That bundle will be buried with the heart of the buffalo at the center of where the building is being built before we lay the foundation for the building. And that's our offer, our ceremonial offer to the land, to ask the land for permission to build this, but also to support us and sustain us as we embark on this new journey to serve our community and strengthen their ability to kind of stand up and to live good, healthy lives. So it's all connected. All the programming we do with young people and with folks in the community somehow feeds back into sustaining also the organization, strengthening the work that we do and recognizing the reciprocity. You know, we are relatives to each other. So our role and our job here is to take good care of each other. And to everything that we do is we do with the eye on like what's good for the next seven generations. So we put all of our investments in that.
Wow. Hey, those words, Dr. Stately, are really good medicine. I really appreciate that. Wow, that's just awesome. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, and we're going to take a quick break, and this is Native Roots Radio.
Are you ready to rock? KFAI brings you Killed by Kiwis, Admiral Fox, Doll Chaser, and Lee Chenvert live at 7th Street Entry.
It's rock.
It's garage rock.
Glam rock.
It's punk rock.
It's folk rock.
Four bands, one stage.
So much rock.
Tickets for Killed by Kiwis, Admiral Fox, Doll Chaser, and Lee Chenvert at the 7th Street Entry can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we are here with Dr. Stately and Haley Cherry, and Dr. Stately is the president and executive officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And I know you got to get going here soon, but we want to applaud you, welcome you back, and applaud all the work that Native American Community Clinic has done and is going to be doing in the future. It's exciting news.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's good to be back on, you know, Minnesota soil, that's for sure. It was lovely to be in Ireland, and I met such amazing people there, just amazingly beautiful, kind, loving, generous, spirited people there. It was like such a really beautiful experience. A good number of them also asked me about, like, you know, what do you think about that president of yours? I was like, oh, please, let's not talk about they don't like him over there very much either. So, you know,
well, I think the feeling's mutual all over the country, all over the world, except for Russia.
All over the world. Yeah, exactly. So, but it was a beautiful experience. Easily one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Like, I have breathtaking pictures of, like, the Cliffs of Moher and, the beautiful, beautiful North Atlantic Ocean is so incredibly, like, just, oh God, breathtaking. It was just beautiful. And I saw so many stars. Every single night I would go out and take a walk with, like, the people I was staying with. I would go out and take a walk at, like, 9 o'clock, and it would be like, you know, and I'd be up on the top of this mountain. I could just see, like, stars as far as I could possibly look. Wow. And I was like, I haven't seen stars like that since I was maybe a kid living in South Dakota in boarding school. Like, it just doesn't get dark enough here for us to do that. So really remarkable. I think on the second to last day I was there, I saw a shooting star. I looked up just in time to see it, watch it burn out. So that's a good opportunity to say a prayer and, you know, make my little Irish wish.
Yeah. Jeez, no leprechauns though, huh? You didn't see
no leprechauns. No, in fact, actually, I would really have wished I could have seen a leprechaun. What was interesting though is, like, we were staying in this Airbnb in outside Doolin, and in County Clare, and it started actually when we were first in the northern part, closer to Armagh. Just on the other side of the border of Northern Ireland. And we started noticing, like, little things happening in the house, like, you know, something going missing here, or, you know, those kinds of things, just, you know. And so then, and then when we got to the house down in Doolin, like, you know, somebody lost their brush.
Little people.
So we were like, we talked about that at you know, the woman that we were staying with, whose family was from that region. Her name is Rita Davern. She has a documentary that she made called Stories I Didn't Know, which was about her journey of understanding how her ancestors had come from, who had immigrated, her great-grandparents had immigrated from Ireland to Minnesota. Her great-grandfather had bought Pike Island, which is part of the, which is actually Bedote, where the Minnesota, right, Dakota, Mississippi rivers meet, which is kind of like the creation place for Dakota people. She had met my sister on a Bedote tour, and she learned about that as being like one of the most sacred places for Dakota people, and also the birthing island that Dakota women, one of the many birthing islands that Dakota women would go to have their children, their babies. So she embarked on this journey to learn more about her family and her family's history around Pike Island. And she talked with her, the documentary is about her having conversations with her relatives, including her siblings, about, like, you know, well, what can we do to sort of like repair this relationship, this harm? She said, you know, her narrative was basically like, you know, we were colonized in Ireland, and we had our land taken away from us, and all these roots, mm-hmm, all these privileges taken away from us, our rights to our land and our religion and our language and our culture. And then we immigrated over here and we did the same thing. So the Dakota people. So her movie is a really beautiful movie. It's a documentary that you can find on TPT or PBS. And it's already seen, I think, over a couple million views in the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. But that we went back to her family's home in the Burin, which is in one of the oldest and most sacred places in Ireland, on the southwestern coast of the island. And it was such a beautiful and magical place. But we talked about this. We talked about, like, you know, the connections between, you know, Dakota and Ojibwe people. We have these stories about little people that will do things like take something from you and hide it from you, especially if it's something that you put too much ownership into or too much investment, mm-hmm, in. It's kind of like teaching us a lesson to be like more generous and less tied to physical things, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so we had these conversations like, you know, well, why would somebody take my brush?
Yeah.
But there were all these little things that were happening the entire time we were there. And it was really cool, really very magical. But I didn't actually see one, so that was disappointing.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Haley, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just so taken in by that story. What was the name of the person with the documentary?
Rita Davern.
Rita Davern?
Rita Davern, D-A-V-E-R-N. She was part of the O'Davern family, which is one of the oldest families in the part of the territory of Ireland. In fact, she took us home to her place in her Burin, where their grandparents or great-grandparents are from. And we went on this amazing, and we went to visit one of her relatives' sheep farm. They have a sheep herding farm, and they also have a fort that they're responsible for taking care of, which is part of their family's fort. And it was like the some of the excavations that have been done in and around that territory. They work with the Ireland, I guess it would be the equivalent of like our National Museum here, to sort of like carbon date things and how old things are, mm-hmm, within that territory. And the elements that are part of that original fort that her family was kind of the governors of in that space are 1600 BC, before,
wow,
before Christ, or before colonization, however you want to think about that. But it was just remarkable, just an amazing, you know. And there was too much and so much to sort of learn and experience, and even just the 10 days we were there in that one specific territory. So, like, you know, I'm already planning to go back in a year or two.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what's interesting is that, so we have a boat down on the Mississippi, and of course, Bedote, which is, mm-hmm. you talked about, the Street Davern goes right to, our marina. I mean,
it goes by your house, doesn't it?
And but down to the river.
Mm-hmm. Is the street mm-hmm. called that?
Yeah, Davern.
Davern Street, yeah.
Yeah.
That's named crazy. After your family. But I think one of the things is, so that relationship has been a really beautiful relationship. And, you know, one of the really cool things was we went to like these schools and other areas, and we made the news because my niece, Jillian, and Ramona and I, we spoke to a couple of these schools. We visited a school specifically at the foothills of, I think it's called Slieve Gwillion, which is one of the oldest. So that part of of Ireland that Armagh is in, and in and around Armagh, is called the Ring of Gwillion. And it's, there was a, I think an astronomical or geological aberration that happened where there was a volcano underneath Ireland back in the, I guess, Ice Age. And then the volcano, instead of erupting outward, it imploded. And when it imploded, it went down into the earth, and then it caused these big, huge mountains to come up in this round shape area in that part of the country. Incredibly beautiful mountainous area that's just remarkably gorgeous and just has the most unusual rock formations and also soil and the kinds of things that grow there. Just a remarkably beautiful, deeply, deeply spiritual place. It's like when you're in the space, you can just feel the power. It's so incredible. Beautiful.
Wow, we need to talk more about this, but Dr. Staley, we've held you on 4 minutes long here, and we always appreciate your time.
It's okay, I'm good until 6 o'clock.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Oh, this is you.
Oh. Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Well, you get me for the full hour.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, it's been a while since we did that. That's like back in the old days.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, it was, I just like, I would say that, you know, one of the things that was really cool about the whole thing is it reminded me of like how important it is for us. Like as Indigenous people, we have always traveled everywhere. We didn't stay in one place. You know, this idea that we would just stay in one area. We also didn't have the same ideas about our relationship to land. Like, you know, colonizers, their relationship to land is like, I own this. This is mine. I'm going to stay here forever. And I'm going to do everything I can to protect that because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's about, and whereas, you know, our relationship to land as Indigenous people is like, it's deeply spiritual, deeply ceremonial. It's deeply, you know, and one of the things I think that was really remarkable about the trip is how much it reminded me about, you know, as Indigenous people, we've always traveled all the four corners of the earth. We went to all these other places where we found relatives and we learned something from them and we brought those things back home. And that's one of the reasons I think why we have a lot of similarities in the way that we sort of like, the way we, the rituals that we have in which we practice ceremony, the ways in which we, the relationships we have with land and the animals and the spirits of the place. It's because we shared stories and we shared knowledge and wisdom and practices.
And, yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and I just got to remind everyone listening to Dr. Stately is that, you know, we all come from tribes. You know, some of us, we're the last ones colonized, you know, us Indigenous mm-hmm. people, but, you know, before the religious fanatics came in and changed everything, we all been kinship to the earth and Father Sky. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. I'm here with Dr. Stately and Haley Cherry, and we'll be right back.
Oh, Aho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka Hicha Wicha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we're always excited to have an author on, and we have an author named Marionette Pember, and she is a citizen of Red Cliff Ojibwe Tribe and the author of Medicine River, A Story of Survival and the Legacy of Indian Boarding Schools. Hey, welcome, and we are so blessed to have you on here and talk about this this story that's really has deep roots to everyone in Indian country, but you're speaking of your story about your mother and how it's affected your family. And I just want to say a big peeni gigi. Thank you so much for being on.
Well, bonjour, gakini wia. I said that wrong. It's gakina wia. Bonjour, gakina wia. It's been a long day. I've been doing interviews all day, which is not common for me. I'm usually just burrowed down here in a bat cave, grinding away. But yeah, so today the book drops. So it's an exciting day.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to promote too, I will be introducing you and maybe even grilling you with a few questions at Moon Palace Books on Thursday. And that is April 24th at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Moon Palace Books in Minneapolis. And you will be speaking about your book. And I'm just excited. It's a great venue. And everyone, come on out. It's free and check it out. This is a very important story. And let's start talking about this story.
Yes, well, you know, the book, gosh, I feel like I've been writing it my entire life, really. I mean, my mother, you know, told me stories about the sister school from my earliest memory. They were kind of my bedtime stories, really. And I'm the youngest and the only girl. And, you know, somebody else is asking me, you know, why did she only tell you and not tell your brothers? And I think a couple of reasons. One, you know, because I'm a girl. But, you know, I think at that time, you know, there's a big gap between me and my brothers. And I think she felt safe, you know. Things had, my dad's business was, you know, decent. And I think, you know, they had a house. And I think she finally felt safe. And she felt that she could talk about that stuff. So she would tell me these stories, although sometimes she would, you know, kind of add, like, you know, make herself the heroine, you know. And it always ended, you know, in a good way. And I don't think, and then I found out later in real life, it didn't always end in a good way. So she put, you know, a lot of shreds of truth in it, but I was told those stories from my earliest memory. And I always also knew somehow later then, you know, as I became an adult and went off to university and so on, she, you know, it was like this kind of gauntlet she threw down before me. And I was like on this quest to tell the world, you know, about her life and some of the hypocrisy, you know, that she experienced there at the sister school. So I talk about in the book, it's kind of a sweeping history of boarding schools. It's not like in depth. It's not like, you know, Adam's book, which is, you know, Education for Extinction, which is an incredible book and, you know, very detailed. But I weave in my personal experience with my mom, who I think really had mental illness as a result of a lot of stuff that happened to her, untreated PTSD. You know, she really suffered terribly. And certainly in those days, there was nobody to talk about to. And even the idea that one could talk about those things didn't exist. So, you know, I began wanting to, you know, figure out why our family was the way that we were and what troubled her. And it was difficult growing up with her. And it kind of began my interrogation into her life and then became, you know, interrogation into the influence of boarding schools on Native people and led to this book.
Yeah, I really like the brief histories. And I think a lot of people, and again, you know, we're in that time of at least U.S. history where we have to be reminded and teach our allies out there what really happened to Native Americans because of these boarding schools and during this boarding school era. You know, the last boarding school that closed was 1996. And it isn't like history, you know, dinosaur time. It was just our family's history.
you know, there's still boarding schools now. I mean, I think, you know, there's a number of boarding schools, Riverside and Pine Ridge. I think that boarding school is still going. You know, on the whole, they've changed, obviously, quite a bit. But, you know, they've kind of become, I think it's, you know, an accepted experience for a lot of people. Some people kind of generationally go to them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And, you know, there's things that happened and to our relatives. And I know my Chujunk here, we have our own history with our nanny being in boarding school and her father, breaking her out basically and bringing her home. But that isn't really the case. There was a lot of trauma in the sense of them have to go to boarding school, can't speak your language, all these things that really put down the spirit of our elders and our relatives.
You know, and I think, you know, it's interesting, a lot of the interviewers want to talk about that I've been doing today. They always want to talk about the, you know, the real ugly stuff. They want to hear about the beatings and so on. And yeah, that really did happen. I mean, my mother was beaten a lot. But I think in some ways almost worse was just this message that you received that you were just bad as you were, that being Indian was not, you needed to get rid of that. And so as you are, you were just a priori kind of a bad person and you needed to recover from that. And that, you know, sent a really bad message to people, I think. But then, you know, also there were different, there were different experiences like there are in every kind of experience like this. I think it depended on where you went. There were often cases, people you would go and there'd be people from your community there, or maybe even, you know, cousins and other family members. And in those cases, you know, people, I think they did a lot better. And then even sometimes, you know, they say there's all this kind of research that they have and data proving that if a child, even if a child is raised in a really difficult environment, you really only have to have one adult like that will treat you in a really good way and speak positively to you. And sometimes there were good teachers there and still are. I mean, people that would, you know, would lift kids up. And my mom even did talk about having a couple of teachers, you know, that did encourage her. So those kinds of things, you know, we're such humans, you know, we're such survivors and so resilient, especially children, you know, even a little bit of positive messaging can help us. So I guess what I really do want to say, you know, it was not just like a uniformly, you know, horrendous negative experience for everybody. It was complicated and diverse.
Well, and she spent her time at age 5 away from her family. And I think that erasure, again, of, you know, we as Natives are our aunts or our mothers and how our relationships are with our families was taken away. And it's hard for our relatives to be a mother if they're not showed how to be a mother.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about that. And yet my mom, she didn't have that model of a family. And you know, she really, really wanted it. But, you know, she didn't get that. And I think a lot of our people don't get that. Haven't gotten that. And, you know, you don't do so well if you don't have that. And I think some of that has been passed down among our people. My mom, she had such a difficult time, you know, demonstrating affection, and it was not, you know, it was just not normalized for her. She was really quick to assign blame. It was like, you know, that was always one of her big goals, and making a mistake was just, I mean, even a minor mistake was something she would go on and on about, you know. And I think she must have just experienced that quite a bit, you know, when she was at the school, you know, just a real intolerance for mistakes.
Yeah, or getting blamed for the mistake, wrongly blamed. Who knows what happened? That's one of those deep, deep things. So how did your relationship with your mother change over the years? You know, can you fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah, you know, I think I for a long time, I was really hurt and angry with her. because she, you know, could, she could be really cruel. And I drank over it, you know, for a number of years. And then at some point, you know, that just really kind of stopped working for me, and I got into recovery, and that really helped me, you know, gain some perspective on her. But it took a long time. I had an AA sponsor who assigned me to pray for my mother every day, with no specific kind of ask, just to pray for her to have peace.
You know. Yeah, I'm sorry. Those pesky AA sponsors, you know, they want you to do those things that really help yourself by helping others, and that's an amazing thing, is pray for others, especially if you have some kind of resentment.
Yeah. So I started doing that, and you know, and I kind of got tired of it, but I just did it. That was my it was my assignment, so I did it. And you know, I like to say one day, kind of like this wand kind of just descended from the sky and like hit me on the head, and I just stopped being angry with her. It just went away, and I was able to stop blaming her for everything, and I got over myself a little bit, and I was able to kind of see her as another person. And you know, finally I was able to forgive her, although still I can get myself worked up and be mad at her for some of the stuff that she did. But it just, you know, I think I got some perspective on it. And after learning, especially all the stuff that happened to her, I got to thinking, gosh, no wonder the woman behaved in this way. So, you know, it was like, and I often do tell people, I mean, if you don't remember anything from what I've talked about to you, remember that going forward. It's been a really useful, helpful thing for me.
Hey, we're here with Marionette Pember, and we're talking about her book, Medicine River, again on Thursday the 24th at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Moon Palace Bookstore. We'll be celebrating the release of Medicine River. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Lara, don't you let
them get your head down. Welcome. When you hear it, you know you're with friends and family. You know you're safe. You know that wherever you are, you're home. It's why the Arcadian Wild named their latest release Welcome. And it's why the Cedar welcomes them to the stage on Wednesday, April 30th. It's folk for modern folks. It's bluegrass with new class. With lyrics as sharp and precise as their harmonies, the Arcadian Wild creates music that celebrates community, connection, and the power of being welcome. Opening the show, our new bluegrass duo, River and Rail. Tickets for the Arcadian Wild can be found at the Cedar's website. Visit thecedar.org for more details.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts. How?
Oh! Hey, we are here with our friend Marionette Pember, and she's an independent journalist, and she has a book coming out, Medicine River. And it will be showcased at Moon Palace Bookstore, and I'll be there on Thursday, April 24th at 6 p.m. And please stop by and listen to this important story and also buy a book. Welcome back. And Haley, you had some good comments here.
Oh, yeah. We're here with Mary.
Excuse me. I did want to make a correction. I'm not independent anymore. I'm actually national correspondent for Indian Country Today, which is now called ICT News.
Yeah, we love right them.
On. Right on. Oh, okay, cool. Moon Palace Books sent me the wrong bio. Darn them. Cool.
That's the old one. That's the old one, I think. I don't know where that came from.
We'll write you a new one.
Exactly. Haley, you had a good response during the break.
Oh, yeah. We were talking a bit about the book, and Mary, you were talking about your mom and her experience attending boarding school. I would love to know kind of where you, your family grew up and what school you're talking about that your mom attended.
Yeah, so my mom grew up on the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin, not far from Ashland. It's actually now called Moshkazebe, Medicine River. And she lived in the little town of Odena, which is still there, obviously. And it actually means a village in Ojibwe Wabamin. And she went to St. Mary's School, which I think it was originally called St. Mary's Indian Industrial School. At different times, the name has been changed to St. Mary's Indian Mission School. But it's a very old school. It was established like in the 1880s. And kind of on the cusp of, like, you know, the big push of the timber industry and so on into Wisconsin, and they, as they were building the railroads and stuff. So it was still kind of considered a wilderness when those sisters first came to establish the school. So my mom was born and raised there. She went to sister school there until like eighth grade, and then she went to Flandreau Indian School. And she graduated. She had a high school diploma, and she's very proud of that. After a period of time, she actually met my father, who's a non-Native man, and they were married and lived in Janesville, Wisconsin, which is where I grew up, which is a town south of Madison.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's the suburbs there. So let's talk a little bit more, too. How are we concluding this? Well, first of all, let me say this to our listeners. Where can somebody get the book that's not in the Twin Cities? Because we're all over Turtle Island, and people are interested in this. Where can they purchase this book?
Well, it should be available, like, at any means, you know, any bookstore. Of course, one can purchase it online at that really large vendor that many of us shop at. And I guess I'm trying not to shop at that so much. But, I mean, there's a lot of independent bookstores. I mean, and I think if you just typed in Medicine River and my name, I think you could find a good place to buy the book.
So you've been saying earlier, people, you've been doing a lot of interviews. What is one of the most asked questions?
Well, the people, non-Native interviewers really want to hear about all of the horrible details. They want to hear that it was all just sort of this uniform experience, that all of those Indians just got beaten and mistreated. And they really want to emphasize that, how everybody was forced, and they were, you know, and there were different experiences, though. But I find that really interesting, that they really just want to hear about the worst of the worst. And I don't know what that's about. I think early on, especially, you know, particularly in the 19th century, it was pretty bad. I mean, I think they would just show up and drag you off. And, you know, especially those early schools were very militarized, you know, like Carlisle and so on. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would just cut your hair off and dress you up in these little uniforms and, you know, change your name. And I think, you know, things did change, you know, over the years, and I think especially into the 20th century, although, you know, it was a harsh experience, I think, for most people. It really was. And, you know, and there was really no regulation. There was no oversight, you know, and a lot of places were kind of located in remote areas. There certainly wasn't anybody out to oversee how they were treating those children. They really worked kids a lot. And if, you know, what I found really interesting in doing the research about just even the early settlers coming to this country and the church missionaries along with them, they were just so frosted that us Indians didn't work all the time. Yeah. Drove them crazy that we would binge work sometimes, you know, something we were harvesting or so on, or cooking, you know, syrup or whatever, you know, but then when there wasn't work, people would visit and just flat out frosted those people. And they would always talk about that Indians needed to acquire the habit of hard manual labor. And that was kind of part and parcel of civilization. That would change us and that would better us. Mm-hmm. And that even went into, that was some very early on, even in the 1500s, but then even later we began, I saw that kind of language, like the guy, Thomas Kenny, who was the first, you know, head of the Indian Bureau, I forget what the original.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting.